Please join me in the responsive invocation which is in your order of service. We gather to seek, to find, and to share the promise of honest religion. And so it is a sacred time, this, and a sacred place, this. Vulnerability more powerful than strength. It's a sacred time, this. Let's begin together in song.
The reading is by Sophia Lyon Foz, and it's titled, For So the Children Come. For so the children come, and so they have been coming, always in the same way they come, born of the seed of man and woman. No angels herald their beginnings, no prophets predict their future courses, no wise men see a star to show where to find the babe that will save humankind. Yet each night a child is born, is a holy night. Fathers and mothers, sitting by their children's cribs, feel glory in the sight of a new life beginning. They ask, where and how will this new life end, or will it ever end? Each night a child is born is a holy night, a time for singing, a time for wondering, a time for worshiping.
I invite you now to join me in prayer. These are the words of Eusebius, the 3rd century Christian bishop. May I be no one's enemy, and may I be the friend of that which is eternal and abides. May I wish for every person's happiness and envy none. May I never rejoice in the ill fortune of one who has wronged me. May I, to the extent of my power, give needful help to all who are in want. May I never fail a friend. May I respect myself. May I always keep tame that which rages within me. May I accustom myself to be gentle and never be angry with others because of circumstances. May I know good people and follow in their footsteps. Amen. The reading today is from Christ Climbed Down by the beat poet Lawrence Ferlinghetti. Christ climbed down from his bare tree this year and ran away to where there were no rootless Christmas trees hung with candy canes and breakable stars. Christ climbed down and hid from his bare tree this year and ran away to where there was no gilded Christmas trees and no tinsel Christmas trees and no tinfoil Christmas trees and no pink plastic Christmas trees and no gold Christmas trees and no powder blue Christmas trees hung with electric candles and encircled by 10 electric trains and clever cornball relatives. Christ climbed down from his bare tree this year and ran away to where no intrepid Bible salesman covered the territory in two-tone Cadillacs and where no Sears Roebuck creches complete with plastic babe in manger arrived by parcel post, the babe by special delivery, and where no televised wise men praised the Lord Calvert whiskey. Christ climbed down from his bare tree this year and ran away to where no fat, handshaking stranger in a red flannel suit and a fake white beard went passing himself off as some North Pole saint, crossing the desert to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, in a Volkswagen sled drawn by rollicking Adirondack reindeer with German names and bearing sacks of humble gifts from Saks Fifth Avenue for everybody's imagined Christ child. Christ climbed down from his bare tree this year and ran away to where no Bing Crosby carolers groaned of a tight Christmas, and where no Radio City angels ice skated wingless through a winter wonderland into a jingle bell heaven daily at 8:30 with midnight mass matinees. Christ climbed down from his bare tree this year and softly stole away into some anonymous Mary's womb again, where in the darkest night of everybody's anonymous soul, he waits again, an unimagined and impossibly immaculate reconception, the very craziest of second comings. So here we are, 4 days before Christmas, and we are in the aftermath of a divisive church conflict regarding the dismissal of our minister. Everyone seems to be hurting. I know I am moving between emotions of sadness, anger, and confusion. It is not a good place to be. The future looks uncertain. Many of us are disillusioned about our church community, and most of us are still trying to make sense of what happened over this last month. Christmas time is the time where the dominant religious culture and the dominant secular culture are telling us this is a time of joy and celebration. I am not feeling much joy and celebration right now. Christmas is often a time when we Unitarian Universalists turn to our Christian roots. There's a certain irony to this, since for most Christians, Easter is far more important than Christmas. Easter is about the resurrection of Jesus, which demonstrates the divinity of Jesus. Christmas, on the other hand, is very much a story about the humanity of Jesus, the celebration of his birth, and the hope that his birth symbolizes. I am feeling all too human right now, and the powerlessness that that involves. Hope is something I think would be helpful at this time. The religious message of hope about Christmas often seems to get lost amidst the aspects of the Christmas season that the poem I just read somewhat cynically described: the tinsel Christmas trees, the plastic babe in a manger, and the North Pole saint in a red flannel suit with a white beard. It's really not much sign of hope there for me. These images of Christmas are so familiar to us from television, from shopping malls, and the front yard of our neighbours, or perhaps, if we are honest, even our own front yards. Yes, confession time in the UU church. I warned you we'd be going back to our Christian roots. Despite the rampant commercialization of Christmas, there is an important religious message to some Christians, and it is perhaps the most important aspect of our Christian heritage to most Unitarian Universalists. That is the idea of the Incarnation. The divine embodied in flesh is the literal meaning. Incarnation is the idea of the divine being active in our material world in human form. In Christianity, this figure is Jesus Christ, who came to communicate a message of salvation to people and therefore took human form. Our Unitarian Universalist ancestors embraced the idea of incarnation very seriously and reached some radical conclusions. Incarnation to them meant our highest ideals are embodied in our own human form and become an active presence in the world through our own actions. The 19th century Unitarian Universalist, or Unitarian, William Ellery Channing, describes it this way. Jesus came not only to teach with his lips, but to be a living manifestation of his religion, to be, in an important sense, the religion itself. Christianity is a living, embodied religion. It is example and action. This is a call to us to live our values actively in our lives. The incarnation of our values in the world. Thinking in these terms helps me understand the Christian idea of the church being the body of Christ. This term can be confusing, I understand that, but I find it helpful in thinking about our religious community being infused and guided by high ideals and moral values. The mission statement of this church reads, "As an inclusive religious and spiritual community, we support each individual search for meaning and purpose, and join together to help create a world filled with compassion and love." Just as some believe the spiritual energy brings alive the material presence of the body, our religious community is brought alive by high spiritual ideals and morals of our mission. Without such ideals, we are just a physical building and a social group, not a religion. In thinking of our church here in Austin as a body, it is fair to say that our particular body right now feels battered, bruised, and broken. It is difficult to find the infusion of high spiritual ideals as we assess where we are as a religious community. In our Unitarian Universalist tradition, the local congregation has the power to call and dismiss a minister. There is no hierarchical power structure that imposes ministers on a congregation, as in some religions. The right of a congregation to call any minister of their choosing is a great strength of our movement and has allowed us to be the first religion to call a woman minister, a gay minister, and transgender ministers. This is an aspect of our history that we are rightly very proud of. The shadow side of this congregational power is the conflict and divisiveness that can occur within a congregation around the dismissal of a minister. Sadly, this is the latter case that we have demonstrated in the last few weeks. We are in a time of great pain, uncertainty, and confusion. We have voted to dismiss our senior minister, and our future is definitely uncertain. There is a pain about the loss of the minister, there's a pain about the process leading up to the vote, and pain about the division in our community. I personally have a pain that is far beyond the disappointment of losing a colleague and my supervisor. I have a pain that is an injury of my soul. My spiritual wound is due to our religious community losing touch with the core elements of our mission, such as compassion and love, in the turmoil of the last few weeks. I look around our community and see great hurt amongst many people on all sides of this vote. I am also pained as valued members of our community leave wounded by the events of recent weeks. I heard and read statements about the senior minister and members of the Board of Trustees that I found offensive and disrespectful. And I believe such statements have no place in any community, especially our religious community. We have the right to free speech and disagreement. In fact, that is at the core of our liberal tradition. But we have a responsibility to exercise those rights respectfully and for the greater good of our community. The value of the inherent worth and dignity of every person is not a value that is turned on at our convenience. Such values are principles that we are called to follow and may be most important when we engage with those that we disagree with. Some people who supported dismissal told me that they felt they had their church back. Others who wished to retain the minister say they feel they lost their church and plan to leave our community. I would remind both groups an important yet often unrecognised tenet of our liberal religious tradition. You only lose this church if you leave it. The church as a community is still here and hopefully always will be. We do not exclude people because of how they voted, what they believe, or have creeds you must conform to before you join. For those who have come back because they feel they have their church back, I caution them that this is a different church today than the church they left. Churches, like physical bodies, are organic institutions. They change over time as new people come in and with their energy and vitality take the church in new directions. This is a very good thing. For those who feel they have recently lost their church, it is true the church they experienced before the conflict is no longer with us. It is said that forgiveness is giving up any hope of a better past. I would suggest that the church of the past, for all of us, is gone. That we cannot unring the bell. We must attempt to heal our present wounds and begin envisioning what church we want in the future. To begin healing, we must understand the mistakes we made in the past and why recent events have caused so much hurt in our community. I sympathise with the frustration and sadness that leads people to want to leave this church. We have a high expectations of people in our religious community, be they our minister, board members, committee chairs, office staff, our friends in the community, and even our ministerial intern. We are all human and often fail to live up to the values as we would wish. When wounded in our lives, many of us turn to our religious community for healing. When a part of our religious community is a cause of our wounds, then we struggle to believe our church can be part of our healing. I believe a spiritual injury needs spiritual healing. Perhaps the healing can happen in another religious community, but I would suggest that the healing may be more whole, more complete, if it occurs within the religious community that caused the injury. The great 16th century Unitarian Francis de Vides said, "We do not need to think alike to love alike." We hear these words often in the Unitarian Universalist churches, and we hear them so often that we can forget the profoundness of what they mean. These words are so much easier said than acted upon. In the recent turmoil in our church, these words occurred to me often, but sadly, too often in the violation than the observance of the sentiment. We claim that we wish a diversity of opinions, and then when we disagree on a major issue, we seem to very quickly fall out of right relationship with each other. Perhaps the problem is many of us join our movement because we want to be around people who think like we do. When a point of disagreement comes up in our community, then our relationship with each other can quickly sour, and we are at a loss of how to repair it. As most of us know from our intimate relationships, a relationship based on love is no guarantee of agreement on all things and avoidance of conflict. Apologies to any of the new lovers out there. A relationship based on love is a commitment to stay in relationship and work out the difficulties in a mutually beneficial way. Both our religious connection to our church and our intimate relationships can grow stronger if we work through the differences and the conflicts. Being around people who have the same opinions as us is certainly comfortable and supportive, but I believe only limited growth can occur. I believe we grow more when we are in community with people who challenge us and are willing to stay in relationships as we differ in our thoughts. We can all grow spiritually through this challenge. One of our duties as members of this religious community is to hold each other accountable for our actions, values, and opinions by calling us to embody these values in our actions. I believe Davidson, our minister, attempted to hold us accountable to these high ideals through his sermons. I believe the board thought they were acting to hold ministerial leadership accountable to these higher values. Many members of our congregation attempted to hold our leadership accountable to values of fairness and openness in recent weeks. These were all good aspects of what happened. I believe the failure of our community in the last few weeks is where we fell out of love, respect, and compassion with those we disagree with. We stopped living our mission by failing to act with compassion and love. Reasonable people can disagree on issues, and disagreeing respectfully is possible. A chasm developed between groups within us when listening stopped as the voices got louder. There was a dehumanizing of people on all sides of this issue that was heartbreaking for me, and I'm sure others, to witness. I also feel complicit in this, since I did too little to stop it. I regret my failure not to do enough to address the dehumanizing words and actions I witnessed on all sides. For example, I was talking to a ministerial colleague from another church yesterday who was disgusted by us having many of the documents available through our public website. I too was troubled by this, but did not address it. Damage was done not only to our church, but our Unitarian Universalist movement by that action. We all probably can think of areas we should have done and things we should have done to address these issues and things we wish we had done differently. Our views became entrenched, which limited our imagination to see a greater range of possibilities for the process and how our actions might impact others. I think much of our pain is that we know in our hearts we could have done so much better. To return to the earlier analogy of the church as a body, prior to the board's request for Davidson's dismissal, a large portion of this community saw our church as healthy, vibrant, and happy. The request for dismissal and build-up to the congregational meeting showed that much of the body of our religious community was injured and in pain. There was a disappointment for many of us that we were unaware of the true feelings of our friends and fellow members in our own religious community. This painful realization that what we thought was a community of health was really a community of brokenness was a shock to many. In looking at how we heal and move forward, I am trying to find sources of hope. One hope I find is that we were not failed by our values, but our failure was in living up to our values. We often fail to stay in relationship with those we disagreed with, to love those that did not think like we did. I have had people on all sides of this issue talk to me, trying to find meaning in what happened and seeking to understand their own pain and perhaps, most appropriately, the pain of others. An honest seeking to understand the pain of others is a sign of hope. The need to be in fellowship with those who share a view is understandable and may be needed in providing us support at this time. The beginning of healing in our community, I believe, begins when we start getting together with those having differing opinions and listening. Not trying to argue our point or find reasons to dismiss what they say, but listening to them to understand why they have the feelings they do. Hopefully, if we listen to them, they may reciprocate and listen to us. We'll hear why people with similar information believed, acted, and reached different conclusions, very different conclusions than we did. Perhaps we may understand most of us were acting in what we believed was for the better good of this community. Out of this may grow a seed of respect. And though that is not quite the same as loving another, it has the potential to grow there. And at least we will be back in right relationship and moving forward. I wish us all well in this difficult journey and hope that we can all be part of it. It is important work that we need to do. As we move towards the Christmas holiday and look forward to our future together, I offer you the words of Howard Thurman to hold us in love. When the song of angels is stilled, when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and princes are home, when the shepherds are back with their flock, the work of Christmas begins. To find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among the family, to make music in the heart. May we all find the music we need in our hearts at this time. And through our actions, may we be the incarnation of our highest values of love and compassion in this world. And in doing so, let us be the healing, rebuilding, and bringing of peace that our community and world desperately needs.
Please join me in the responsive benediction, which is in your order of service. We leave this sacred time together. Our world needs us and the spirit we carry forth.
Let us become the light, the truth, and the healing that we seek.
Amen.